everybody. Welcome to Bury Me in New Jersey. I'm your host, Sarah Woolerman, and I'm excited to have you join us for this week's episode featuring co-founder and CEO of Gathering Us, Noah Weibsnyder. Based on her own experiences of organizing memorials and funerals as part of a large family, Noah recognized the challenges of coordinating such activities for extended groups firsthand. This, coupled with the ongoing difficulties families face due to COVID-19 restrictions, has made the need for alternative and virtual gathering options even more essential. This led to the creation of Gathering Us, an online platform that takes care of the planning and logistics of virtual funerals and gatherings, allowing guests to share stories to honor and celebrate the person who's passed. During our conversation, we discussed the initial inspiration behind this venture, the way that it's grown and evolved as the way we're able to grieve continues to change, and the lessons that Noah's learned while helping grieving families during such unprecedented times. Before we officially kick things off, I'd like to mention our season-long sponsor, Keeper. Keeper's online tribute pages are a simple way to preserve and celebrate a loved one's life story online. Invite friends and family to share memories, photos, and videos, plan a virtual memorial service, and more. Use code BURYMENJ to receive 10% off your Keeper Plus membership. Visit mykeeper.com to get started today. While there are no specific content warnings for today's episode, we do discuss having to plan and coordinate memorial and funeral services for loved ones and the ways that grieving has been impacted by COVID-19. Without further ado, here's my interview with Noah. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Hi, Sarah. It's nice to meet you. I'm Noah Weibsnyder, the co-founder and CEO of Gathering Us. I started working on Gathering Us almost 3 years ago to help family and friends come together to support each other and celebrate the life of their loved ones. Around the time that COVID hit, we realized that we needed to prioritize ways to help people come together. And something that had been actually on our product pipeline for almost a year at that point was virtual events. The point of having a gathering or a funeral or memorial is to really have your community come together and be there to support you and to visibly be able to see all of those faces and people around you who are there to be there with you. Now we've really evolved that into a much broader and larger part of our services and our company. One thing that we've evolved in the last few months is also adding hybrid events because now a lot of people might have 20 people in a funeral home or a church or at home, and then everybody else, whether it's 50 people or 500 people, are dialing in virtually.
Where is Gathering Us based? Like, where are your employees versus the people that you're helping?
Yeah, our employees are all over. And our events are also all over. Mostly it's been the US and Canada, but we can really do events anywhere as long as it's not the middle of the night. And that's actually been a really interesting evolution, something that with COVID, we've actually really grown our team significantly. We're at about 20 people now. Wow. And most of those people we've never met in person. It's unbelievable and incredible to think about how much the world has changed and so rapidly that we've been able to ramp up and grow. And we have our team all engaging with each other and communicating and training and doing events all virtually.
Wow. And I mean, so like when you're finding someone to help work on the team, I mean, because you have to, it sounds like you have to be pretty savvy with tech support, but I'd imagine there's also that element of like being empathetic because you're also dealing with people who are like actively grieving.
Exactly. It's a really tough role to fill. And we have different roles. Some people are more on the tech side and some are not, but everybody who joins the team does need to be really comfortable with technology. And we found early on, we hired a few people that were not, they were very empathetic or they were really interested in end of life, but they couldn't keep up with all the various systems that we're using technologically to be able to work with the families and to work with our team internally. And there is actually a lot of technology involved. So it's interesting. We say our key hires need to be, our first thing is empathic, someone who can really be there for the family. And the second thing is both comfortable with death and tech, which are two
Two
really,
complicated things, right? Is there any sort of training that you have to give to people about, like, how they're talking to families in those
For
situations?
sure, for sure. And so we do a lot of training and talking with our team about how to communicate, how to convey things. There are, even if you've actually faced a lot of death personally, it doesn't mean that you know what to say to someone else, right? So there's a lot of things that are really important for us to convey about how to be there for someone, how to hold their hand, how to show empathy and not sympathy. And that's
Yeah.
something that's really hard, that you want to be there with them, not sort of condescendingly sympathetic, which are two different things. And then the one piece that is specific to our company and that is something that is our brand and something that we our brand values and something that we stand behind is our tagline is celebrating lives together. And that's not for everyone, right? Not every family is going to approach a funeral as a celebration of life. And we're okay with that. We don't have to be there. We don't have to work with them if they don't want to come with to us with that perspective. But it is something that we stand firmly behind. And that's obviously harder when it's a really tragic death or a really young person. There's obviously many times when it's hard to be in the mind frame of celebrating a person. But it's very much a part of who we are and what we stand for and what we are trying to help communities do.
That's actually really interesting. Like, what made you make that the focus of how you wanted to offer these services?
My husband is his family's Irish, so they have a really large family, but they're also mostly not very religious. And so over the last couple of decades, when you have a lot of people, you also have a lot of death. And we organized a lot of the funerals, about a dozen funerals over the last couple of decades. And we realized that it's a really hard time. And what enabled us to get through it was the support of our friends and family and the gathering. And I think partly because of their cultural heritage, the events were truly celebrations. They were always in an inspiring location or a place that the person loved, somewhere beautiful. We read poetry or sang songs, played music, and really made it a very personal and customized tribute to that person. And it was truly a celebration. When I think about one of the biggest clues for me was when my daughter had to draw for school. She had to draw a happy day in her life, and she drew a funeral. She drew us like at the cemetery.
That's kind of awesome.
And to her, that was a happy day because she was there with all of her family and friends, and they were, it was a celebration. And that's, really the best case scenario, in my opinion.
Yeah, that had to feel like a parenting win, you know? I mean, for a kid to like embrace something and feel like good about it, especially something that like a lot of times, like, you hear people talk about like the trauma of like a kid kind of navigating that.
My kids have been to a lot of funerals, and obviously they hear me talk about death all the time. And they have good questions, and they're very thoughtful about it. But I think that they are definitely getting a very death positive education and a perspective of how much we value our loved ones and our life, and that every moment is precious.
What was your origin story with all this? Was it kind of just inspired from your this personal experience, or had you been doing it before?
So my previous company, I started another company in 2004 in the also in health and wellness, but in the food industry. So
Okay.
very different. But I do think of it as somewhat related because they're really both about health and promoting health for people, with gathering us the emotional support of bringing your community together, I think is fundamental to the grieving process and mourning. and helping people heal and move through that process. And similarly with my food company, it was about staying healthy and having a healthy lifestyle. And what's interesting about the trajectories in both is when I started in food, it was before the natural food industry was really out there. It was very early. Organic wasn't even a thing. And so I was part of a new group of companies that were helping to change the industry and build a whole new category within food. And I feel very similarly about death, and I can see it now as the industry evolves and I meet people in the industry. There are so many cool new startups in the end of life space, and they're all doing incredible things and really changing how we approach the space and the offerings that we're able to create for people and how we work with them and changing people's attitudes about what's important and how we prioritize it.
It's interesting because it's almost, when I first started getting involved in like death work and exploring things, and it's like, oh, like, you think you have this understanding, but then you realize you just kind of started to scratch the surface. And then like I traveled a little bit last year and I was like out on the West Coast and I was like, this is a whole new world of things, different types of burial and different types of services that are being offered. And it's exciting. It's almost, I'm here for it, but it's almost overwhelming, like all the different things that are happening at one time. You're like, wow, like, 'cause you feel like all of a sudden this, like, it's sort of, I don't know. It's like, it's emerging right now.
For sure. And it's so exciting. And the more people, the more companies that come into the space, the faster it's going to happen and the more change we're going to be able to create. And we've actually, we have a Slack group that a whole bunch of us are on, and there's a bunch of new conferences. There's so much happening. And I really do try to collaborate as much as I can with other companies in the space, even if they are slightly or very competitive with us, because I think it makes such a difference for us all to lift each other up and support each other and make the change together. The more that we are each successful, the more that we will be successful together, for sure. The West Coast is really interesting because in food and in death, they're always ahead in many trends, right? They're always ahead than the East Coast. And so you can see where things are going when you look at the West Coast. And one good example is that overall in the US, more than 50% of people are now being cremated. But on the West Coast, it's over 70%, right? So people, that is where things are going. And it's been evolving very rapidly, especially in the last 15 years. And now even more so. And that has lots of implications, right? Once you do cremation, there's a separation between the body and the memorial, right? How you come together around a person is different if you don't have the urgency of the burial. And that can be positive or negative. I think for the most part, it's positive as long as people actually do come together and plan events around it. But it does give you a little bit more time to actually create an event that matches your vision for how to celebrate that person.
Yeah, and that's interesting because, that was something that I didn't even realize how was like how hardwired in me that type of mourning was, because I grew up in an Italian Catholic, background, and so having like the open casket viewing was just such a part of what it meant when someone died. And when I started to go to more memorials or services where, it's just the picture or it's the urn, and I'm realizing like, wait a minute, like there's different ways to mourn or there's different ways to have this experience. And it was something that I totally took for granted. Like I didn't even realize, until I started to experience other, other cultures or other just like other setups.
It is interesting, and I think there is something useful about seeing the body. It helps your brain wrap itself around that and creates a sense of that happened. For example, when my husband's step grandmother died, they decided to postpone the memorial until the following spring when the whole family was going to be together. And in between the time that she died and the time that we had the memorial, a few months later, I was talking about her at one point and completely forgot that she had died.
Wow.
Because I hadn't seen her in a couple of years.
Right.
And right, so in my mind, there wasn't that sense of closure, right? There wasn't that moment where it made a memory and an impression in my brain that she was gone. Seeing the body is helpful, but I do also think that there are many ways that you can create that memory, you know, by having an event, right? Having that very significant event of people coming together.
How did you come up with ways to give that sort of, you know, lasting impression, you know, even though it's through screens?
Yeah. The screens are actually sometimes much more powerful than in person, which
really?
I know some of your listeners are going to be surprised to hear that. But actually, we hear it over and over again from our clients and their guests that the event was way more up close and personal and powerful than in-person events that they have been to. And I think for a number of reasons. One is, if you think about a traditional funeral, most people are seated in rows. And so most of what you see is people's backs. Whereas in an online, a virtual event, you actually see everybody's faces and very close. And so
yeah,
you can feel the emotion and you can see what everybody's going through at the same time in such a powerful way. And that makes a really big difference. The second thing is that with traditional funerals, people often rely on what they think they're supposed to do because this is how it's been done for a long time. Whereas in a virtual event, in a way, they're empowered to really rethink it and do something that is much more unique. And so by not being forced into the cookie cutter traditional memorial that they used to do, they often do something much more creative and much more meaningful. So we've had people do everything from doing an ice cream social because the person really loved ice cream. And so at the end, they have everyone bring ice cream and they all eat it together. We had another one where they said the person loved fireworks, and so we played fireworks on the screen. And that was really lovely and beautiful. There's been, you know, the grandchildren doing a piano recital or, you know, singing a song that they wrote for their loved one. We've had just so many really beautiful and interesting tributes that often wouldn't happen in a regular traditional in-person event. And so I think this change has empowered people to really move into a whole new direction.
That's cool. And I mean, I'd imagine too, because I know, you know, for me, it can be hard sometimes to grieve in front of other people. And even though you're in front of a screen, like I imagine like there, you know, you might feel like there's a little bit more space to, you know, if you get emotional, you know, like you're with a group, but at the same time, you're also kind of in your own space. So maybe you feel a bit more comfortable.
For sure. For sure. A, you feel more comfortable. B, you can always turn off your camera, right? If you really don't want people to see you. At the same time, often there are a lot of people on the screen, and so you don't feel like it's all about you, right? You're seeing everyone going through their emotions. And then the final thing is that typically there are so many more guests at a virtual event than there are at an in-person event. And we hear over and over and over how meaningful it was that these people could attend from all over the country or all over the world that would have definitely never been there in person.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to continue to be the case, both through COVID and after COVID, right? There's people are certainly not going to have the money to be traveling across country or even to other countries. They may not even be able to get into another country to go to a funeral. And I know personally before COVID, there were many funerals where I couldn't be there in person. I had my grandfather's funeral last year and my sister couldn't come because she just had surgery. And I live streamed it for her, which was something so she could see it, but she couldn't talk, right? She couldn't really be there and she couldn't communicate back to the group. And so seeing how powerful it is to really enable people to be there and to contribute and to be part of the conversation is really important.
That's really cool. Yeah, no, I mean, it's, there's so many strange silver linings to COVID, you know, and I know I sometimes I
feel bad saying it, because I know that there's been a lot of people who've definitely felt the effects and the suffering of it. But, you know, I think that it's made us realize the importance of being able to connect in ways that, you know, maybe we took for granted before. And it's opening the door for these opportunities, like you said, where, you know, people might not have been able to leave their house, or, you know, people who might not have been able to travel in that capacity, who can now participate and be involved in things that, you know, otherwise they would have been completely alienated from.
Completely, completely. And it became really apparent to us, even on our first event. I remember this woman, it was actually at a funeral home and it was an open casket. And there was this older woman who had dressed to the nines. She had all her makeup and jewelry on. She was clearly very excited to be there virtually. And I remember when she saw the casket and she, you know, she just exploded with, "I see her, I see her." And she was just so excited to be there, to be a part of it. And she kept thanking us afterwards for making it possible for her to be there. So yeah, it became really apparent early on just how many people wouldn't be able to be there and wouldn't be able to pay their respects and be there to support without this technology. In a way, we're very lucky that it's happening right now versus even 20 years ago, right?
I mean, even now, like, you almost take for granted, like, you forget, you know, like, just how much things have evolved and how quickly and what that means for what we're able to do now. And it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one interesting thing is even how quickly things are evolving through COVID. When we started 6 months ago, we went out to a bunch of funeral homes and churches and synagogues and said, "Hey, we're going to do these virtual funerals." And it was before things had fully shut down. And so everybody was like, "I don't know, that seems really weird and out of the box." And, you know, a week later, when things started shutting down, we started getting calls back. But at first, there were still, you know, so many questions about what does it mean and what is Zoom and right, all these things that people didn't know about. Now it's evolved to the point where everybody knows what Zoom is, right? Or a lot of people know what Zoom is. And so very quickly now the conversation has shifted to the technical details, right? Because people know a lot more and they have a lot more questions. And then there was a sort of space in between where people who knew enough about Zoom understood why they didn't want to be doing it themselves, right?
Yeah.
So there's that in between when you become a Zoom expert and when you realize I might be a Zoom expert, but the last thing I want to do is handle somebody's technical issues during my event or be sharing the, you know, slideshow, you know, while I'm doing it and making sure that the volume is right or right. All of the stuff that just like, you know, with like wedding planning, for instance, right? Like, yeah, you probably could do it all on your own, but most people hire a wedding planner nowadays, right? Because it makes such a difference to have somebody who is a professional and can handle all those things so that you can be present and be with your community in that moment.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off, you know, that way you're able to be actively mourning versus like facilitating other people's mourning while, you know, trying to kind of keep yourself in check.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. You already have a lot, enough on your plate for sure.
Right. For sure. So how does that generally work then? So, I mean, like when a family contacts you, you know, like what's the period of time that you're usually, you know, interacting with a family or getting something together or, you know, does it depend on what they're looking for?
It really varies. Funerals are very different depending on the family, the culture, the ethnicity, the race, religion, all the other things. And each circumstance is different. We have some people who call us and say, "We have an event in 3 days. We need, you know, we have no wiggle room. It's based on the burial or the funeral home, or everyone's already on board with this date and it's right away and it's very quick." And then we have people that have already booked events for 3 months from now. So it can range really dramatically. And it's really interesting to see, you know, how people, you know, what they do in kind of like a wedding, right? Some people go straight for the elopement and some people go for a 2-year planning session.
Right.
You know, like I said, with my husband's grandmother, it's not, I think a year long planning is too long.
Yeah.
Though, you know, sometimes people will do a smaller event soon after the death, and then they'll do something bigger at the 1 year anniversary. And I think that can be really nice because it gives you something to work towards and a sort of line in the sand to draw at the 1 year mark, which is really nice, and to bring everyone together. And sometimes having that extra space can give you time to go through the initial mourning phase and do something that is more meaningful for you later on. But I do think that there's something really valuable about doing something in the first few weeks after a death.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I think that, like, to your point, that feeling of closure or just that acknowledgement, you know, I think, I know that, you know, in my personal experience, you know, my cousin's husband's sister died of cancer at the very beginning of COVID. And it was like right when things were so uncertain and there just was no opportunity for any kind of real, you know, services. And I mean, I applaud people's innovation because, you know, they did like one of those caravan funerals where they at least, like the drive-by like viewing and, you know, acknowledgement to the family, which was really cool. But all the things that you kind of grasped onto are gone. And then you're just sort of left with this heaviness. And then it's like, there's no place for your grief to go.
Yeah. And that is one of the key things about converting, going from grief to mourning, is having that public acknowledgement and interaction about it. And so it is so important to have, to find a way to interact with your community and your friends and family to really publicly acknowledge it. It is really important. We have had people who, like you said, back in March when there weren't options or people didn't know about the options, we've had people come to us now and say, "Hi, I went to one of your events recently and we were so moved by it. And we had a death back in March and we'd love to plan an event now." Cool. So we're definitely seeing some people do that now and finding ways to have closure at a later time.
And like what you were saying about just, you know, some of the cultural or religious or, you know, race implications around like some of the planning, did you need to do anything to prepare, educate, you know, understand, just, you know, I mean, I'm learning just all the different ways that people mourn or the way that they perceive death, which is so awesome, but it also blows my mind a little bit because you think, you know, and you're like, I had no idea about half this stuff.
And it's so different for each family. So we definitely try to do some training around that. We also try to make sure that our team is as diverse as possible so that we can lean on different team members and they can all share and support each other through different types of events. But the key part, I think, is really listening to our clients as well and what they want to bring to the table. We start all of our planning meetings with, what would this look like for you if you were doing this in person? And then we try to integrate elements of that or take whatever is meaningful about it and do a version of that virtually.
Music potentially plays, you know, a role in grieving and mourning. I don't know if that's something that comes up in the services or even if you've had personal experiences with that.
For sure. For me personally, the song that over the last couple of years has been really meaningful is Memories by Maroon 5, which is, to me, so captures how I feel about death and cherishing loved ones and how to remember them and celebrate them. And for our clients, one thing that we do play music either throughout the event or we also add music to the slideshow and they choose the music that is meaningful to them. I find that music, the music selection can be really interesting in what they choose. We had one this past week for someone who was actually pretty high up at the Fed. And we had Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell and Ben Bernanke all spoke at the event, which was amazing. And he was also a huge Francophile. He loved France and everything French. And so a bunch of the music was really fun French music. And that was beautiful. And definitely, oftentimes the music will reflect either the time period when, you know, the person was young or what they were into or, you know, their style. And that can be really nice.
That's, have you like discovered any music through this that you're like, ooh, I actually really like this? Like, you know, a little playlist that you've put aside?
Actually, early on, we had this plan to come up with playlists to give to people as templates, but it hasn't really been a necessity so much. I think, to your point, music is something that is so personal and that most families are actually able to come up with something that is unique to them and that makes sense for the person that they are celebrating. And, they can really go there and use that as part of their process as well.
No, it's interesting. I mean, it is always cool to see, like, it almost becomes that therapy and like what you can tap into through the music. And it's neat that, I don't know, everybody has their own experience with it, and then it sort of makes it its own unique little element to a service or a memorial.
For sure, for sure. And we usually also do, we'll have music playing when people come in. So the opening part while everyone's kind of getting seated for the entry, we'll have a program showing with a photo and some music playing at the beginning while we're waiting for everyone to show up. So that also sets the tone very much around the person.
That's cool. So what do you see as the next evolution for Gathering Us?
Right now, we're very focused on the hybrid events because people are trying to do more of these, partial in-person and partial virtual events. And that's important for now, but also important for the future because once people are able to gather more in person, they're still going to want to have all of the other people who can't be there in person with them. And so we want to make sure that we're able to support them through that and that we have a lot of different options for that.
That's cool. And do you do any, like, after an event is over, is there any like post-event just follow-up or connecting with a family? Do you feel like it's primarily like event planning, or is it almost like, is there an element of an emotional support that goes with it just by nature of the work?
Yeah, for sure. And so our memorial site, gatheringus.com, is free. And we have everyone that we do virtual events with also creates a memorial page. And on that page, they can share photos and stories. And we urge people at the end of the event to go back to that page and continue to share stories there because it is so meaningful for the family to keep getting those. To be able to keep hearing about their loved one, and over time, as we think of that as a hub for everyone to continue to share and view.
Do you see a lot of people who keep up with it, or how long do you generally see people being active in there?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more activity in the immediate aftermath for sure. But then we also see people coming back to it a year later. And it's interesting, even very early on, sometimes people wouldn't even get that much activity on their memorial page, but we would see the person who created it would go back and visit it, and it was almost like a shrine for them to go back and have this space to reflect and to be with their loved one.
My first interest in death and like memorialization and dying came even before my mom got sick. I was really into roadside memorials, and the way that people built this shrine or this art, in honor of the person. And I did this project where I used to leave note cards at the shrines to give people an opportunity if they wanted to do interviews or if they wanted to talk about it. And how many people said that like that space that they created was they felt more connected to their loved one there than they did going to the cemetery, because that was actually the last place that they were, that they were alive, and that, and that's inevitably where they died. But it's interesting to think about how that's even evolving with, being online. I see now, like, with people who die and who had Facebook accounts, and what, seeing people who post on their wall. But to your point, it's like now you have this tangible space on the internet where you can go and you can think about your person.
Yeah, exactly. I think our online presence has become, people really think of it as their virtual real estate in a way, right? It's a real place that they go visit And we saw actually that to me the most telling was this one woman who created a memorial, and she didn't really add much to it, and she didn't share it with anyone. She was the only person that went to look at it. But she wrote on it, it was for her daughter, and she said, "I love you, Mom." And to me, that was so interesting because it literally was just her virtual shrine to her daughter. And it, even though it was private and it was just hers, she had delineated or designated the space online.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's kind of cool to see the way that, you know, you build something, you know, knowing that it's, you know, the intention is for people to grieve, but the way that people make it their own or how they choose to do it in that space.
Yep, it's so different for each person, and definitely not something that I could have predicted in the different ways that people have evolved. And so much of what, you know, we're constantly updating and optimizing, and so much of that is based on people's feedback and what they need from it.
Has there been anything that you were like particularly surprised about, or like something that maybe you were like, okay, we're going to do this, but you know, it really took off, or something that people were like, we don't like this, or, you know, just anything that was kind of like not an expected turnout?
Yeah. So I'm Jewish, and when I started it, I assumed that everybody would use it kind of the way I would use it, which was, you know, 24 hours. They had all these logistics to deal with, the burial. It was all very fast. And it would be a lot about, you know, posting event information and who can do what, and people didn't use it like that at all. In fact, most people didn't create a memorial until maybe even a week after the person had died. There was just so much more of a lag, you know, and now we're seeing it with the virtual events even more so, right? I mentioned we have events for 3 months booked out, right? People are booking events for a month from now, 2 months from now, right? It's so much more stretched out. The timeline is not as immediate. They're not using the platform as a logistics sort of communication space as much as they're using it as a shrine and a place to designate for their virtual memorial.
As one of the owners of this, you're running it as a business, but at the same time, like if people are using it in that capacity, I mean, that's more of an emotional lift than I would imagine that, you know, that I would have anticipated, you know, because like you said, like you're thinking, okay, here's the logistics behind it. You have to get this done, and it's a planning service, but then, you know, like you said, it almost becomes, you're offering, you know, empathy, you know, or you're offering this space that is safe.
For sure. Yes. And it definitely became, it evolved in so many ways that I couldn't have predicted. And I've learned so much about what people are going through and the different ways that it can present. And I continue to learn every day, for sure. There's so much to learn. I think it was about one year into it that I started really thinking about the difference between empathy and sympathy, and the ways in which we are there for people. And I think we're all always learning about that and always learning to be better listeners and better at being there for people. And, you know, partly through the people using the platform, but also through the industry and all of the various industry events. That has been one thing that's really helpful, because I've been going to lectures and workshops and learning from other people who are doing it. And so also being able to engage the various topics on a much higher level than if I had tried to start this 10 years ago. Right. And so the fact that the industry is growing right now means that I am better educated. I'm better able to educate my team. There have been a ton of events recently in the space around Black Lives Matter, which is amazing because, first of all, it's important, but also because I'm able to bring that back to my team and I'm able to learn a lot personally and really engage in the topic personally. Again, if the industry didn't exist, right, the way, or if it looked more like it looked 10 years ago, I wouldn't have access to all of that. And it would take me much longer to synthesize all these things and to be able to really employ them.
I have my little notebook that I keep on the side, but yeah, I had written about the thing about empathy versus sympathy, because I think that is such an important, it's such an important thought, because it's so easy to confuse the two. And, you know, and to be able to actually provide what a person needs by giving empathy versus sympathy.
Yeah.
Because it feels different.
Yep, it does. And it's also so much harder to do when you're not with the person in person.
Yeah.
You know, because so much of giving support, especially after a loss, is literally just being there and not even necessarily saying anything, but just being quiet. And it's really hard to be quiet from far away.
Yeah.
And so it definitely becomes even more challenging. And one of the things that we've really spent a lot of time talking about, to your earlier question about the memorial site, is how do we encourage family and friends to keep sharing stories on the memorial, not just in the immediate aftermath, but, you know, in the, you know, the holidays or the birthdays or the 1 year anniversary or, you know, the dates that are really hard to get through. And then also the everyday, you know, throughout, especially that first year when things are really hard. And we've spent a lot of time thinking about that, whether it's, you know, do we send out emails to the community and remind them, or do we have other, we've looked at some other options like gifting items or boxes that they could send that would arrive at different times, and other ways that they could find a way to show their thoughtfulness or presence in other times throughout that year.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, because I think that's something that's important, and it's also so complicated because it's, you know, grief doesn't end at the funeral. You know, grief doesn't end after, you know, like 6 months or a year, and you know, figuring out the way to best accommodate the way that a person who's mourning feels, you know, because some people. Whether, you know, and that's the tough thing. You know, I think so many people are afraid to upset somebody, and so they don't want to acknowledge the grief, the loss, and then all of a sudden that person just kind of disappears, and that's excruciating in its way, you know. Yeah. But then you have those other things where it's like, well, you know, how can you honor that person and the loved one they lost without like triggering or, you know, upsetting, or, you know, doing it in a way that feels thoughtful and not harmful, I guess.
Yeah. And it's different for each person, and it can be different each day or each moment of the day. Right. Depending on where you are, it really, you know, people's emotional states can vary throughout time and can go up and down. So it is really hard. It's very hard to do.
When thinking about that, like, I guess it's also like, it's having that conversation too with like the person, you know, and I guess it's, but like to your point, it's also got to be tough too, because it's like, you know, how they feel at 3 months might be different than 6 months, or might be different tomorrow, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, completely. And it usually is. But I do think a big part, and we've tried to create some resources and articles on our site about this, but a big part of it is, and a big part of empathy, right, is listening and paying attention to the feedback you're getting from that person, and not assuming and not expecting and not burdening them with your assumptions or needs. And you know, and it's hard, but it really requires very active engagement of who they are and where they are in time and space.
Now, I know this is like a very like complicated and nuanced topic, but is there any, you know, and for the sake of like somebody who's like listening to this, is there any even just like key things that you could suggest on that? Like, you know, if somebody's in that position where like someone, you know, has lost someone and they're at a loss for what to say or do, is there any kind of go-tos that you feel, or even just, you know, something like an easy starting place with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think checking in with them. And checking in not necessarily about the death, but about other things going on in their lives as well. Staying present and staying in their lives. So like you said, not disappearing, because that's the worst thing you can do. Listening as much as you can. So if you can, you know, just a good old-fashioned phone call and just be quiet is really useful. You know, if you can be there in person and social distance and also be quiet. There's something in a traditional, in the Jewish tradition, when you go to somebody for a Shiva house, which is the week following the funeral, the instructions for that time are to be quiet, to walk in and to not say anything until that person speaks to you. And I think that that's really key. It's that the showing up and being quiet is really important. And the last one I would say is to not say, what can I do for you? Because that adds to the person's burden of having to come up with something for you to do for them.
Right.
And so if you can try to think of things that would be useful, and ask them if those are things that you can do for them. And then also make sure to say, you don't have to write me back or you don't have to call me back. Don't feel any pressure. Just know I'm here. It's really important to make sure that they don't feel burdened with the responsibility of also reciprocating.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think it's also really important for people to like not take it personally if you don't hear back, because that's something that I hear a lot from people, you know, like, oh, I tried to call her and she didn't even get back to me. It's like,
yes, of course she didn't get back to you.
Yeah, like it's going to be, you know, you got to give space and grace, you know, those are like two very important things.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I guess the final thing is just know that it is hard every time to know exactly what to do. And it requires your real human empathy and paying attention and, you know, walking a fine line every time.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. There's every death is different, you know, and every person is different. So yeah, kind of approaching it like it's a brand new thing, because it is.
Yep, exactly.
Awesome. Well, Noah, so if people are interested in learning more about Gathering Us, where should they go? What should they do?
They should go to gatheringus.com. And if they have questions about our virtual events, they can click on virtual events and speak with someone from our team. And we are happy to help them through thinking through it and holding their hands through their process.
Well, this is great. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk today. It's been really great to learn about your work and this company.
Thank you, Sarah. It's been a really nice conversation. I really appreciate it.
Once again, I'd like to thank Noah Weibsnyder for taking the time to speak with me. If you'd like to learn more about Gathering Us, visit their website at www.gatheringus.com. Join us next week for our final episode of the season when we speak to Nurse Penny, a registered nurse focused on hospice care who uses TikTok to help normalize conversations regarding death and dying.
There's just relief when you say, yeah, that's normal. You know, we see this all the time. And there's just this relief that comes over them to know that what's going on is not supposed to be scary. You know, it's just a normal part of the dying process.
Bury Me in New Jersey is recorded in Hammond, New Jersey, and is produced by Nick Rumisick. Our theme music is P to the A by Anonymous Novels. Check out their page on SoundCloud to hear more of their work. Thanks again for listening to our show today. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to Bury Me in New Jersey on your favorite podcasting app. And while you're there, please consider leaving us a review to let us know how we're doing. If you'd like to provide us feedback directly or have ideas for an upcoming episode, please reach out at sarah@buryme.nj.com, and that's Sarah with no H. Visit our website, buryme.nj.com, to learn about ways you can support the show. Thanks.